Good afternoon and welcome back to our Saviors Online Radio Show. It's great to have you with us again today. I am Pastor Eric Jelinek, joined as usual with Pastor Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. So we are continuing. We just finished talking about Solomon last week, and we're going to go on in 1 Kings. We're starting about chapter 12, and we're going to talk about what happened after Solomon, because at this point, things get a little bloody once again within the kingdom. There's actually a split that's going to be taking place, and we will start to see some prophets jump up once again and come and basically bring God's word, sometimes of judgment, to the kings and what was going on. And so we're going to start, like I said, in chapter 12 of 1 Kings. Solomon had just passed away, and his son, Rehoboam, was basically chosen to succeed him. And so Rehoboam knows that Solomon's passed away. He is the one who is going to be king next. So he goes for an anointing. And while he does this, there's a guy named Jeroboam who had heard what had happened. Now, Jeroboam had basically gotten a fight with King Solomon earlier on, and he had fled to Egypt. And when he heard that Solomon had passed away, Rehoboam was going to be taken over, Jeroboam returned. And he said, you know what? It's time for me to get back involved in what's going on once again. So he went with a group of people to go and see the king and basically said, you know, your dad made things really tough for us. It was a hard life that we had. And we really want things to be a little bit easier. So would you lighten our yoke for us? And Rehoboam said, why don't you guys go take 3 days, and I will sit and consult with others, and we'll find out what exactly will be going on next. And so King Rehoboam then sat down with some of the elders. These were ones who had helped work with his father and judged different things. And the older men basically said, you know, what would be good right here is if you serve your people. And so basically speak well of them and do things that would benefit your people. And if you do that, they're going to love you forever.
They're talking reducing taxes, for one thing.
Right, right. And then Rehoboam took this advice and tossed it aside. And he decided to go and talk with the guys that he grew up with, the younger men. And the younger men basically said, you know what? You're in charge here. And why don't you tell them, you know, it was hard under my dad, but it's going to be harder under me. I'm going to make things even more difficult. One of the lines that they have in here is, my father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. And so in doing this, he started to set up a divide between him and a lot of the other people, including Jeroboam. And this started to lead to a split that was going to take place now. The northern region, Israel, was splitting now against the towns of Judah, or the southern region. And as time went on, Rehoboam became the king of the southern region of Judah, and Jeroboam was then anointed as king of the northern region, or of Israel.
So basically, because of Solomon's son's idiocy, the unified kingdom that had come under David is now no more. And that was actually prophesied before Solomon's death because of the sinful things that Solomon had done. God had told Solomon that the kingdom wasn't going to be unified, that his son, yes, would be king over part of it, but not all of it. And so you see that coming to fruition here, largely because of Rehoboam's stupidity.
And greed.
Greed, yeah. It's... I think anybody could tell him better than this why he would listen to the younger guys who say, oh, no, make it harder for everybody. Then they'll love you. Okay.
Being influenced by peer group rather than being influenced by wisdom of the ages.
Yeah, not his father's son in that way. And, you know, as we talked about last week, Solomon built many huge buildings. And so, of course, he would have to tax people greatly, and he had to use a lot of labor. And now that those things were finished, it would seem that they would be able to kind of ease up. But Rehoboam was not willing to do that. Instead, he was opting for more power and for more wealth, and that did not go well for him. But in the meantime, Jeroboam, who became king over the larger part of the former United Kingdom of Israel, isn't doing so well either, because in the very next paragraph after he's he becomes king of Israel, he's going back and doing the Aaron thing and inspiring people to worship golden calves again. Where he would get this idea, I'm not entirely certain.
Well, part of it, too, had to be with he didn't want his people to go down into the southern region into Jerusalem to worship. Because he thought if they went down there, then they might start to be loyal to the southern kingdom. And so why not build up places that they could worship? And the way to do that, of course, is a couple golden calves. Because, you know, it's always fun to worship golden calves.
Well, apparently. Anyway, that did not do him any favors in terms of his favor with God. And the chapter 13 talks just very briefly. There's a prophecy of a king that will come much later, King Josiah, one of the few good kings. We probably won't even get to him today, but it's interesting that he's prophesied this early on. Chapter 14 talks a little bit about how Jeroboam's house, his kingdom, is judged because of his sin and bringing the idolatry to his people in order to have power. Shortly after that, Jeroboam dies and his son succeeds him. The next part talks about Rehoboam reigning over Judah and the mistakes that he made and the wars that he waged and that sort of thing. I want to skip ahead. Did you want to talk about anything in the middle parts?
No, that's fine.
Yep. I'm going to skip ahead to chapter 16. It's near the end of chapter 16. No, actually, near the end. We hear about, in between all of those chapters, there's a number of changes in rulers both kingdoms. There are many, many kings, and most of them are bad kings, not at all faithful to God, not at all really caring about the people that they rule over.
Including one who got to rule for a whopping 7 days.
Yeah.
I love his name.
I betcha he left an impact.
Zimri.
So the king that we're going to talk about now is called King Ahab, who was another very bad king. Pretty foolish of his own right, but then
easily influenced.
And then he married the wrong person. Ever heard of Jezebel? Well, Jezebel became the queen of his territory. And Jezebel had very strong opinions and she was going to get her way no matter what. She did a number of very bad things. You've probably heard of her before. And we'll get to stories of her a little bit later. But first, coming in chapter 17, we are introduced to Elijah, who is one of the major prophets in the Old Testament. And there are many stories of Elijah. The one that we have in chapter 17 includes the story of the widow of Zarephath. And Elijah encounters this widow who also had a young son, and they didn't really have anyone to support them. They had very little food and almost no water, but he comes and he wants to stay with them and he wants them to feed him, which seems a little bit rude. But in the time, that's what travelers could expect, that they could just go and kind of impose on anybody and that person would take care of them. Hospitality was a big deal back then. But this woman did not have anything to feed him. She said, basically, my son and I are just waiting to die because all we've got here is a little bit of flour and a little bit of oil, so we're going to make one loaf of bread and then we're just going to die. Well, she doesn't know who she is talking to, and Elijah miraculously gives them enough food that they can feed not only themselves, but they could have enough food for a very long time out of the flour and the oil that he brings to them. Shortly after that, the widow's son becomes ill and dies. And she turns to him and is basically saying, what good are you? You come and stay with me. You eat my food. Yeah, you fed us, but now my son's dead. And so Elijah prayed to God and was able to bring the child back to life. And so we see from this story that Elijah is a man that can do great wonders, not just a prophet who says what's going to happen, but he also can do miracles.
And with this raising of this child, too, it's not just that he raised a child from the dead. But also, if you remember back then, women didn't have a lot of rights and didn't have a lot of ways to take care of themselves. And so what he was also doing was providing for this mother by raising this child, that once again, the son could take care of the mom over time as it developed. And so it was even more than just the raising of a son, which is a lot anyway, but it was more than that too. So this drought continued on because there was a major drought going on at this time. And after the drought continued on, Elijah then was summoned to go and see the king. It was time to go and see Ahab. And it was one of those things where everybody knew that Ahab and Elijah really didn't get along. Ahab was doing what he wanted to do. Elijah was the messenger from God who was basically telling Ahab that he was doing the wrong things. And it was a clash of two people. Well, Ahab also had a guy on his side named Obadiah. And Obadiah was one of the leaders that Ahab had. He was in charge of the palace. And Obadiah was also one who stood up for God. Jezebel had problems with a lot of the prophets because, again, she was doing things that were evil in the sight of God. And Obadiah had actually gone, and he helped to stow away 100 prophets in order to help protect them. He had 50 in each cave. You got to love the image of that. 50 guys living in a cave next to each other and taking care of each other. And here Obadiah is providing food and drink for them as well as all a way to protect them. Obadiah is approached by Elijah. Basically, Elijah says, I need to go and see the king. And Obadiah says, you want me to go and tell the king that you want to see him? Well, as soon as I go into the king's presence, the spirit's going to move you away and you won't be here. And then I'm going to be put to death. Doesn't God know that I'm the one who's been protecting his prophets? Why would you do this to me? And Elijah says, no, I'm not going anywhere. You let him know that I'm here and I need to talk to him. So he goes, he gets Ahab. Ahab comes back, meets up with Elijah, and basically says, you know what? You're in trouble. And Elijah says, you know, why don't we do this? Why don't you go up to Mount Carmel, and there you can get 450 prophets of Baal, another god, and another 400 prophets of another god, Asherah. And these are ones who all are friends with Jezebel. So why don't you get them all up on top of this mountain, and let's have ourselves a little bit of a conversation. Well, it's not really a conversation. Basically, a challenge comes out about whose God is stronger, and we see how God burns up an offering that has been soaked down in water, makes a huge impact on everybody that's there, and then Elijah, in order to end everything, goes and kills all of the other prophets. One guy slaughters all of the others. And so that is an encounter that Elijah has with Ahab, with Jezebel, and with the prophets of other gods.
In some cases, this kind of miracle might bring some people to faith and loyalty to Elijah.
Or a little bit of change of any kind?
Yeah, but in this case, it did exactly the opposite. This really ignited Jezebel's hatred of Elijah, and she was after him. She basically put a hit out on Elijah's head, and Elijah knew that he had to stay away from her, and he basically had to go into hiding. And so chapter 19 talks about how he flees from Jezebel and how he hides in a cave and how he whines to God, you know, I've been faithful to you, and now you're going to let me die at her hands. And God says, oh, ye of little faith, basically. and basically offers to not show himself to Elijah, but he brings himself in front of Elijah so that Elijah can experience God's presence. And one of the powerful verses is 19 verse 11. God says, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in the pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He answered, I've been very zealous for the Lord. And so on. And the Lord tells him, go back, return to the wilderness. And then you shall anoint Hazael to be the next king, and you shall anoint Jehu to be the next king over Israel. And basically, I will take care of you. Don't be doubting that I'm going to take care of you. You've now felt my presence. You know that I'm with you. And not only that, but I'm going to send you someone to be your disciple so that he can take up your way after you've left. And we hear that prophet's name will be Elisha, S-H-A instead of J-A-H. And so we now have Elijah with his disciple Elisha.
And so as he's leaving this place, and also one of the things that's drawn to image with me when I hear about God passing by on the mountaintop is it's a tie back to Moses and to Sinai. And so we have, once again, this amazing leader like Moses was, and God really anointing him and then helping to choose his disciple form as to who will follow after he moves on. So he takes off, and as he's leaving, he runs into Elisha. He's out there plowing a field. And as he walks by, Elisha runs over and says, "I'm supposed to be following you. Let me go say goodbye to my mom and my dad, and then I will." And basically, this is how this disciple starts to follow. And so they head out, and they continue on their mission to continue to spread God's message and to hopefully change some hearts and get people to listen to God once again. In chapter 20, we start to see some more of what's going on with some of the wars that are happening. Ahab has lots of wars going on. He goes to war with the Arameans. There's quite often a battle between the north and the south, between Israel and Judah. And so all of these battles are continuing to go on. And sometimes Ahab and his army win, sometimes they don't. It all depends quite often on how Ahab has been acting that time of day. Has he been faithful to God, or has he been basically listening to his wife and taking care of things on his own, or trying to at least? And then we get into the story in chapter 21 about Naboth the Jezreelite. And I'll pass this one over here to you if you want to.
Yeah, this is
one.
An actual story that you can read the beginning to the end. And it's an interesting story and shows you the character of Jezebel in particular. So Ahab had his eye on a plot of land that was a vineyard. And as king, really, he probably had power to take it. But he wanted to either trade for that land, or he wanted to buy the land from a man named Naboth. And so he goes to him and says, "Give me your vineyard so that I can have it for a vegetable garden, because it's near my house. And I'll give you a better vineyard, or I'll pay you for it." And Naboth says, "No deal. I don't want to. This has been in my family for generations. This is my vineyard. I'm going to keep it." And so Ahab goes, "Okay," and he goes very sullenly walking home, and he's all depressed. And
he's a good pouter.
Yeah, Jezebel notices that he's down in the dumps and says, "What's your problem?" And he says, "Well, I talked to him. He will not give me his land." And she says, "Well, who's the king, you or him? I'll fix this for you." And so...
See, I'm getting a lot of mafia stuff from Jezebel often.
I mean,
she put a hit out, and now she's like, "All right, I'm going to go fix this."
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that the name Jezebel has the connotations it does these days. So Jezebel concocted a plan where she was going to be, she wrote letters to people, and she wanted a party thrown in Naboth's honor. And she said, "Seat him at the front and put two scoundrels on either side of him and make them talk against him and accuse him of things. And then people will realize that he's a criminal and they'll take him out of the city and stone him." And that's exactly what happens. They have this party in Naboth's honor, and Naboth goes in all unsuspecting, thinking, "Oh, they all love me. They're celebrating me." And then they put two liars next to him, and they start to spread rumors about the things that he's done. And they accuse him of many things that he was not guilty of. And so they take this man out of his own party and out of the city, and they stone him to death. And as soon as he's dead, Jezebel goes to Ahab and says, "Go ahead, Naboth's gone. You can take his vineyard. Won't be a problem anymore."
Word about this gets back to Elijah. Surprise, surprise. And Elijah then gets to go meet up with Ahab and basically say, "All right, we know you did something wrong." And if you go to 1 Kings 21 and the 23rd verse is what I'm looking at. Here comes the Lord's prophecy. Prophecy, okay. The tongue is working today. And also concerning Jezebel, the Lord said, "The dogs shall eat Jezebel within the bounds of Jezreel. Anyone belonging to Ahab who dies in the city, the dogs shall eat. And anyone who dies in the open country, the birds of the air shall eat." Basically, this family's going to be destroyed. And that is the prediction that is coming from God, the prophecy. And it's something that will, as we will go on, we will see it does come to fruition.
In fact, Ahab's death is not too long after this. If you look at chapter near the end of the book, chapter 22, it says that the king died and was brought to Samaria, and he was buried there. But part of the prophecy that he didn't read was about the dogs licking up Ahab's blood after he died, and it talks about that happening too. So it's kind of a graphic way to describe that, and I suppose is sort of justice for the things that he did, not just against God, but against the people that he ruled over. Ahab was not a good king. And, you know, what we need to remember is that God was the one that was in charge, and these kings were just supposed to be, we're supposed to take God's word into account, and we're supposed to rule faithfully. And it seemed that God was not at all in the forefront of their minds as they ruled over people. If you want to skip way ahead to 2 Kings chapter 9, that takes you to Jezebel's death. She, you know, connives a little bit more between here and then, but I don't think we'll talk much more about that. You want to talk about her death? That's colorful as well.
Before we get to that, after Ahab had died, his son is the one who took over to be king again. And so we start to see this family stuff. But again, there will be more death and destruction with that entire family. So we're looking up at 2 Kings, the 9th chapter, and Elisha is getting involved here now. And he's up there, and he's talking with others and doing some more different predictions that are going on. And he's looking for a guy named Jehu. And Jehu is out there, and they're doing different anointings that are taking place. Here comes another king. We want you to go and do more of the king. I'm getting lost. Sorry. I was flipping pages here, and I got lost a little bit.
Okay, so, well, I'm just going to talk a little bit about Jezebel's death, and then we can come back to the rest kings later. So there is another king. Jezebel has been difficult. She also is a bit of a temptress, and so she tries to tempt the king and other kings, other people, to do what she wants. And so she's basically on top of this building or a wall, and the people look up and they say, "Throw her down." And so they throw her down, and it says, "Some of her blood spattered on the wall and on the horses, which trampled on her." And then it comes in, it says, "See to that cursed woman and bury her, for she's the king's daughter." So they went to bury her, but they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands, basically because of Elijah's prophecy that the dogs would eat of her flesh.
"In that territory of Jezreel, the dogs shall eat of the flesh of Jezebel," said, "the corpse of Jezebel shall be like dung on the field of the territory of Jezreel, so that no one can say, this is Jezebel." So basically, this was the total destruction of her line, of anything that was associated with her at all. It turned it into something that was basically viewed as quite evil.
There's really not much more graphic death than that throughout the whole Bible.
No.
You know, there are a lot of people who did bad stuff, but you don't hear about their death quite as graphically as Jezebel's death.
No, and that prophecy that comes with that, too, is one of the more graphic ones that we have. So
right. Yeah. Well, we're not quite finished with the prophets that we want to talk about, so I think we'll probably continue with that next week. And interesting to think about is the prophets that we had earlier, several weeks ago, talking about Samuel and about Nathan, who were prophets to the kings. They were basically almost like friends with the kings, that they worked alongside them, and the kings typically listened to them. And it seems that role has very much changed here, that the prophets that God has called to prophesy to the kings and to the people are not necessarily listened to and are seen as enemies of the kings, as we see here with Elijah and Ahab. So we will continue next week talking a little bit more about Elisha and his ministry and where that takes the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel.
Thank you all for joining us once again, and we hope that you have a blessed day.